Okay, just so you know, I have turned off my Voices of Nicotine Recovery voice room. And actually, I haven't turned it off, I've just minimized it. So if you type relate or yeah or put me in hugs or whatever you do, I won't be able to see it or ask questions, because that'll just get in my way of my train of thought. So, on January 29th, 2016, at approximately 9:40 p.m., whoops, my headphones just came off my head. Approximately 9:40 p.m., I went outside our house here and to the front porch and smoked the last cigarette that I've ever smoked. And I have not used nicotine or any other controlled substance since then. And that is a godsend. I could not do that without Nicotine Anonymous and Voices of Nicotine Recovery. I sure do hope to get to one of those national conventions sometime soon. I don't know when that will happen, but I've been to several other conventions for other 12-step programs, and they're always a lot of fun. So I have a good time doing that, Kenny. So I guess I'll just start at the beginning. I grew up in a pretty crazy home. Both my mom and my dad smoked. My older brothers kind of dabbled with smoking and also marijuana on and off. And I kind of just felt like it was the thing to do. And I was a pretty lonely fellow because I, if you're familiar with the different roles that people take on in an alcoholic home, I was kind of the lost child. I had an accident when I was 8 years old and fell off of a garage roof and ended up being in the hospital for 3 months. And so I lost a lot of social skills. I was unhappy. I didn't know who I was. And the way I started smoking, in addition to my family and older brothers, was we would have our I lost my train of thought here. We would have our school gym class over at a different school, and I would drive. I would not drive. I would walk between one school and another to go to have the rest of my classes. And halfway down the walkway, we were off of school property, and I don't think it really mattered at this point. It was so such a long time ago. We a bunch of kind of hippies would hang out in between and smoke cigarettes between the two classes. And I would walk by and kind of smile at them. And I didn't have any friends. I wasn't connected with people. I was unhappy. I was lame. And I knew I would find acceptance with these people and some sort of connection. So I finally smoked my first cigarette there. So I know it was in eighth grade, so I don't know, 12, 13 years old, and, you know, hated it. Coughed and hacked and wanted to puke. But these people started talking to me and saying hello and, "Oh, Billy, you can take it. You can smoke. You can You can hang on. You can you just started. Keep smoking. You'll feel better. It won't taste so bad. And you know, these people really abandoned me after a while. I really wasn't interested in hanging out with them. They were kind of roughnecks. They were, you know, breaking the law, doing things that I wasn't into. But they accepted me, and I accepted them, and I got myself smoking. My brothers were smoking, my parents were smoking, and I hid it from my parents for a long time. I went to college, and kind of skipping ahead, and I never really felt like I was addicted. I did want to quit, but I guess that's not completely true about being addicted. But backing up in high school, I didn't really smoke except on weekends, and I thought that that's when I wasn't addicted, is when I didn't smoke on weekends, and only smoked on weekends, that is. Was able to not smoke during the week very much. Went off to college, and that's when I started smoking all the time, and I knew that I was addicted then, and I tried to quit two or three times, and at least two or three times, and never really got it down. But I kept going. I got out of college, got a job, lived with my brother, pretty heavily into smoking dope then. And then roughly sometime between 82, that's the year, 82 and 85, I quit smoking. I think I started and I stopped a couple of times in there. About 85 was when I was done, because I couldn't, if there's breaks in my conversation here, it's because whenever every couple of minutes I look down to see if there's any message that I need to read on that screen, like if you can't hear me. But that isn't there, so I'll just keep going and try and keep my focus here. 1985. I was clean and sober. I decided that smoking wasn't for me. I wasn't getting anything out of it, and I quit like a lot of people quit. They just stopped smoking, and I don't know if I tapered off or what exactly I did, but I just didn't want to smoke anymore, and so I didn't. Along comes many years later, 2002. And I'm hanging out with my brother in Houston, and he says that he's going to go outside and smoke a cigarette. And you know, I didn't know he was smoking. He had these roll your own cigarettes, and so he and I knew he was kind of on and off smoking pot, but I didn't think. He didn't smoke around me because I was a recovering alcoholic and I hadn't smoked pot in many years and hadn't drank. So he was. I don't think he was going to smoke pot that weekend, but he said, "I'm going to go out and smoke a cigarette." And I said, "Oh, I'll go out with you. What the heck?" And we rolled a cigarette, and he rolled these cigarettes. They're the weirdest thing. And he said, "Bill, I don't like packaged cigarettes. I'm just going to roll here," and pull out his pouch, and because I think he only smoked a couple of cigarettes a week, and I don't know how anybody does. But you know, I'm dragging on this cigarette, and I'm getting a little high, and I'm noticing that I'm a little queasy and a little relaxed, a little bit more relaxed. And I go, "God," and his name is Ed. I said, "Gosh, Ed, isn't there something in this cigarette? This is making me a little bit high." And he said, "No, this is just plain old American tobacco." And I said, "This can't be plain old American tobacco. This is just this this is just too good. And he said, no, that's it. Okay. So I stayed the rest of the day. My wife was not with me. I was there by myself visiting. And so I, the day before, the night before I left, I said, hey, Ed, I want to try one of those cigarettes again. It's just, I just want to find out what it tastes like and what it feels like. And it was the same thing. It just felt that way. So, same sort of, inebriation and good feeling. I, came home. I called my wife from the airport and told her that I had smoked a couple of cigarettes with my brother. And she said, well, I don't think that's going to be a problem, do you? I said, no, I don't want to smoke anymore. I was just testing things out. Ha, ha, ha. That was famous last words. That week we went to a restaurant near where she was working, and there was one of these smoke shops next door, and she went... She went back to work, and I went to the smoke shop next door, and I had decided that I was going to give it a try and see what some of these, whether this real American tobacco, packaged tobacco, was going to, whether it was going to give me this same feeling, because this feeling was so good compared, considering I'm an alcoholic and so on. I like to change my emotional status with chemicals, being an addict, and I bought these. We used to call them animal straights, camel, no filters. Instead of camel straights, they were animal straights. I think at that time only Pall Mall and Camel still made non-filtered cigarettes, and my dad used to smoke them when I was younger. And so he gave, I bought a pack, and I smoked one there in the parking lot, and I couldn't believe how good it tasted, not so much taste really, but how good it felt. It felt so good to be feeling this nicotine and feeling this inebriation, this relaxation, this good feeling come over my body. And I probably hid it from my wife for some time. And pretty much I was off to the races over the next, let's see, that was 2002, and I quit finally for good in 2016. So I was off to the races for the next 14 years. And when I was a smoker in high school and college, I was never much of a smoker. I was maybe a pack a week, not that much, maybe a little more in college, maybe a little more when I left college. But when I started again in 2002, I probably only smoked 7 or 10 cigarettes a day. And, you know, it's like alcohol. It's not how much you smoke or drink, or I smoke or drink, but how it affects me. And it was devastating. My life was devastating. I kept trying to hide it from my wife. I kept trying, you know, drop her off at some place to pick up her car and try and smoke a cigarette on the way home. And one time we got to the car dealership and her car wasn't ready, and she saw me put the cigarette out in the parking lot. And I just, you know, just crazy behavior. And somewhere along the line, I think it was the same year. I can't remember what year now. I also got hooked up with somebody who introduced me to marijuana again. I still haven't had a sip of alcohol, but somewhere along the line there, I got stoned and started over on my 12-step recovery and got more involved in AA because I really needed it. And boy, that marijuana is good stuff for the emotional sense of well-being at the time you're doing it. When it's over, it's horrible. When you come down from that high, it's just terrible. So it was just that one time. But the interesting thing about the years between 2002 and 2016 was I was able to put together some good periods of sobriety. I, without the help of Nicotine Anonymous, I would stop smoking for a couple of months, one stop smoking for a year, and called up my insurance agent to get the non-smoking rates, and we looked at the rates, and we couldn't find any good rates that were that much better than what I had, so I just went out and bought another pack of cigarettes. And even though I'd had a year of non-smoking, just crazy behavior. I never really admitted that I was going to stop smoking. That I could, and that I committed to the process. There was always something that told me, well, I can pick up a cigarette here. I can have a couple of cigarettes here. I could smoke for a while, and then I can quit again. And sometimes it was fairly easy to do that. I would quit smoking, and I would announce to my wife that I'd quit smoking, and my friends, and things were going well, and then all of a sudden somebody would see me smoking a cigarette, and they would say, well, why are you smoking again? And I said, oh, I don't know. It just tastes good. It just feels good. Feels good is the key. Smoking always made me feel good. And anything that makes me feel good is something that I want to continue to do. Because I've been afraid of my emotions and afraid of how I feel my entire life. I have just wanted to change the way I feel. And I talk to a lot of people that smoke and say that, oh no, this I never feel that way. I never feel high. I never feel like this is affecting me that way. But it does for me. And when something like that does that for me, I'm hooked. I just want to have it, and I want to have more of it. So I would I had a job downtown Denver here where there were a lot of young people there and a lot of people smoking, and it was easy to get started, and it was easy to make excuses. It was easy to there was just a lot of people that smoked. My coworker, receptionist there, smoked a lot, and we went outside and smoked. And it's just unfortunate that that this this chemical is so prevalent in our society. But it's you know, it's these things that you can't control that that make it sometimes all the more difficult. You know, I tried all kinds of things, not buying cigarettes, not buying packs of cigarettes. I would always carry around quarters in my car, and if I wanted a cigarette, I would run over to the restaurant over here, which is a bar, kind of more of a bar than a restaurant, and there'd be all these people hanging outside smoking, and I'd walk up to them with a quarter and say, can I have a cigarette? And they would say, well, you don't need to give me the quarter. And I would put the quarter on the table anyway, or wherever it was that, and if whoever needed it could come around and pick it. I'd say, just tip the the bar waiter with the quarter, because I wanted to be responsible. That made me responsible to pay people for my habit. And you know, this went on for years, on and off. I would stay sober for 6 months. I would stay sober for 2 months. I would stay sober for an entire year, and then I couldn't let go of it, because in the back of my mind I would have these ideas that I'll just pick it up when I some other day. Or the other thing that's so prevalent about this addiction for me is this idea that I have no power over that first cigarette, that desire, that craving that comes on me, and it happens all the time. I think to myself, well, I'll just see this person. I see this person smoking, and I'll just go ask them for one cigarette. One cigarette's not going to do me in. I'm just going to be able to smoke that one cigarette, and then I won't want to smoke again. And that's just ridiculous. The big book of AA talks to us about having no defense against that first drink. And it's the same for me with nicotine. I have no defense against asking that person standing outside smoking for a cigarette. Nothing in me can stop me from doing that. The only thing that can stop me from doing that is my higher power. And I've had this higher power prevalent in my life since I grew up. And I'm just checking the screen again to see if anybody's made a comment that I need to. I'm always worried never mind. No defense against that first cigarette. I was this last day morning, I was at Panera Bread here in Colorado, and I know they're all over the country, so I don't know if they're in your area, but I was looking outside, and one of the workers was out there smoking, and I thought to myself, well, that's no big deal. I can go out there and get a cigarette from him. And here I am, three years into this, and knowing that I'm going to speak tonight, and knowing that I'd have to cancel my speaking, knowing that I would have to get somebody else to chair on Tuesday morning, because I need 30 days or 60 days or however many, almost said a four-letter word, however many days, and I'd have to come back with my tail between my legs, and I know you'd accept me, and I know you would invite me to come back and ask me to accept me as a recovering person with one day of nicotine free, but I know that I would feel like that word. I would feel horrible, and I would feel shame, and I would feel unhappy, and who knows, maybe I wouldn't be able to stop again. I don't know. That's not something I have very much control over. But I'm happy that I was able to call some people. It was interesting, a roundabout way. I think both Sarah and Tom are in the room here. Sarah is Tom's daughter, and Sarah, I saw Sarah was on there and a couple other people, and I sent out messages. And so I sent a message to Sarah saying, can you, either you or Tom, talk to me? And can either of you call, can you call your dad if you can't talk to me? So Sarah sent me back, what's your number? I'll call my dad. And so I gave her my number, and she called her dad, and her dad called me just a few minutes later. And there I was talking to Tom about this addiction and this, Tom, you're a good man. You had 49 days of sobriety on Thursday, so I'm hoping that you have 51 today. You do good in this universe because you were the one that was there that gave it away, so to speak, your recovery. And I need people that are willing to give away their recovery, because without being able to give it away, we don't stay successful. And excuse me, I thank you for that, and thank you, Sarah, for notifying him for me. Okay, so what else? Nicotine Anonymous. I've been familiar with nicotine, with 12-step programs, since the early 80s, when I last had a drink. And as I said, had some other problems into the early part of this century. But there is exactly one meeting, one Nicotine Anonymous meeting in Metro Denver here, a city of 2.5 million people, I think is what they say. And it's on Sunday afternoons at 12:30, and it's in a long ways from here. And I usually got other things going on at Sunday at that time. And I was going, and then not going, and of course smoking, asking someone there to be my sponsor, and never following up. And just, it was just hard for me to participate. My friend Joe, who's listening upstairs, he was going, and he got started there and found some good people to help him get sober. I was really proud of him. I personally thought that Joe was going to smoke for the rest of his life, and by the grace of God, in April, he will have 7 years being smoke-free, and I just never believed that he could do that. And so I kind of look up to him as my smoking mentor, because I never thought he could do it, because he smoked so much, and I was so unhappy smoking, and he's just really a role model for me. So he doesn't get to that meeting that much, because he doesn't have good transportation, and he doesn't get to these meetings because he doesn't use a computer. So it's really a blessing to be able to get him on to Vonner tonight, and have him listen to me, and get him on to Vonner a week from, or in May, to be speaking, and I can do some more service and open the meeting room and do that. But yeah, Joe is a god. I'll just put it that way. So he's upstairs. I can hear him just laughing at my saying this about him, because I don't think he knows how much I appreciate that he told me about Nicotine Anonymous, because he told me about that meeting, and he told me that he went regularly, and he told me that he quit smoking that way. Now, I had quit smoking before he did, but as I said, I quit smoking so many, and the big one that I didn't make it through was in 2015, when my mom died. And I had been not smoking, And then he smoked, he quit smoking, so both of us had not smoking, and I had a little bit longer time. And then my mom died. 2 years of sobriety. 2 years, can you believe it? And I started smoking again. That's the concept of having no defense against the first smoke. Because if I smoke, then I'm no, but I getting a little wound up here. I think that if I think that I can just smoke a few cigarettes, feel that sort of relaxation, feel that sort of calmness, feel good about it, and then stop. And then, oh God, doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. August or September of 2015 is when I started again, and I trying to quit. I got a week or I got a month between September of 15 and January of 16. And I kept going to. I got myself prepped to go to that on Sunday, and I went a few times even while I was smoking and this, that, and the other, and then. And then I threw my hands up in the air and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do because I have to quit smoking and I don't want to smoke anymore. And so what was I going to say? I went to nicotine-anonymous.org looking for another meeting, and there was a second meeting here in town that was in Aurora. And it doesn't meet anymore, but I went there once and I won't talk about it there. It just wasn't my cup of tea. And there's a couple other meetings, one in Colorado Springs and one up in the mountains somewhere. So all of a sudden I find online on Nicotine-Anonymous and I go, oh my gosh. Online meetings. I have to check this out. So there I go and I look and it shows how to get to online meetings. It also talked about phone meetings and so on, and I haven't really done the phone meetings, but when I saw the online meetings, I went, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. And I saw Michael in the room just a little while ago. He chaired the first meeting that I went on a Saturday. We could go back and see when January 29th of 2016 is. Never mind. I was going to say something, but yeah, I'm going to say it anyway. There's people that you can tell. You can say January 29th, 2016, and they can tell you what day of the week it was, like in a flash, without even thinking about it. It's pretty amazing. But if there's one of those here in the room or you want to go look it up, you can look it up for me. But Saturday at noon is when I started coming to Voices of Nicotine Recovery here on Pal Talk. And Michael chaired the meeting, when I talked last year, about a year ago, because I try to speak every year, he said, "Oh, I remember when you came in for that meeting." And lo and behold, Michael, it's been 3 years, and so I look up to you as well as that first guy that was there. And there was another guy named Truman who was there, and Amy was one of the first ones, and a couple other people that I can't think of their names right now. I was convinced that I needed to come back to this. And for the first several weeks, I came two or three times a week. I'm not that much of a meeting goer, but I did go and talked about my recovery, and it felt a lot like my recovery from my other meetings, my AA and my Al-Anon and the things that I could really share what was going on for me and what my addiction was like and all this stuff that I've been talking about in terms of I was just looking at the text again. It was a lot like going to other meetings and being able to share, especially being able to share what it was like to be in the first few days of recovery. And then I was really grateful I got the idea to do service work, and I picked the day and time that I thought would work. And it's Tuesday morning here at 9 a.m. In Colorado, 11 a.m. Eastern. And there's people in Australia that come to the meeting, not so much lately, but it's kind of late at night. But several people in Europe who are there, and it's just kind of neat to know that there are people all over the world who can participate in this great technological marvel that allows us to speak and to have meetings, because Nicotine Anonymous is just not something that's been that well established in the community. I was in San Diego a couple of years ago, and I went to a meeting there. There were about 20 people, and that was kind of nice. Right there next to Balboa Park, if you've been to that meeting. What else? Where else did I go? Don't think I've ever been to another face-to-face meeting except here in town and there. So that was fun, and so I've been doing this Tuesday morning deal for about 3 years now, because I started at 6 at 60 days after I was sober, and I've never looked back, and I have that to be grateful for, and to hear the new people, and to hear where people are, and get to know people is really a joy, just like I have experienced other programs. The fellowship for me is really I'm really grateful for. Along the lines of just a couple other things, along the lines of the parts of the program that I use to stay sober, is kind of the same thing as what I've used to stay alcohol free and so forth. You could list off all the facets of 12-step programs. You could say meetings, you could say literature, you could say telephone, you could say the steps, you could say those are kind of the main ones. There's probably two or three others. I have enjoyed meetings very much. I like to be around people. I like to be in a circle. I like to be able to speak without having interruptions from crosstalk, and know that I won't be judged. I like the fellowship. I've got some really good friends that I've met in AA and other programs. Not so much in Nicotine Anonymous, because you guys are all over the world. And I use a telephone when I need to call somebody, like I did the other day, to get help. I read literature. I just wanted to pass along that I'm not a step doer. I never have been a step doer. I went through the steps when I was when I first got into AA. I did it two or three times with different members. I took some other people through the steps. I took some people through the steps with Al-Anon, and also with with an Al-Anon sponsor for myself. And since, I don't know, the turn of the century, I don't think I've I had another sponsor after I in the early zeros when I went and smoked pot again, because I needed to get back into the basics. And that's also when I started going to AA a lot more, because I was I had just, you know, fallen off the wagon. I'd stopped going to meetings completely, and I wasn't staying I wasn't staying close to my roots of sobriety, and wasn't kind of going down a rabbit hole of discomfort and pleasure and saying I didn't need the program anymore and all this crap. And and now I'm really happy that I have AA and Al-Anon and my regular group of friends. And you know, life isn't the best. I have my ups and downs. It's easy to, it's easy for me to want life to be wonderful all the time. I've dealt with depression. You know, nicotine is a stimulant. I've used it to alleviate myself from depression. As I said, that cigarette made me feel kind of joyful, and I used it to get out of depression. And that first cigarette in the morning, boy, it's like that no defense against the first cigarette. If I were to go out and smoke right now, I would I'd be feeling pretty good about myself for the first few minutes while that nicotine got into my bloodstream and relaxed my heart and relaxed my my organs and did its little magic that it does to my brain. But you know, it would go away in like a half an hour, and then I would want it again. So it's very, I know that I have no defense against that. So that's why that's why I'm here, and that's why I'm sharing my story with you, because I want to be able to help people. I want to be of service. That was one of the other ones that is part of the program, is I like to be of service on Tuesday morning, and I like to be of service at my Saturday morning Al-Anon meeting, and be of service to my my other group. And so those are the things that I use. You know, they say take what you like and leave the rest. Sitting down and doing steps has never been my strong point. And you know, I've learned not to judge myself about that. It's an important part of the program, and I think I've gotten pretty good at teaching myself how to make amends to people on a regular basis when I do something that I don't feel good about. I got this little my friend in Al-Anon calls it his amend, and then he uses kind of a nasty word after that, that sits on his shoulder and reminds him, you gotta make an amend, you gotta make an amend. So, he kind of considers his amend a something, his friend, but he also doesn't like him. He kind of, you know, goes back and forth, because it's important to have him on the shoulder, because he reminds this amend person of mine, reminds him that I gotta make an amend, I gotta make an amend. And so I've learned to understand that I am powerless over all these chemicals. I am powerless over people, places, and things. I have no defense. My life is unmanageable because of that. because I'm powerless. Only God can take away these addictions. And I'll be an addict for the rest of my life. I have these wild ideas that when I'm old and on my deathbed, I'll start smoking cigarettes because who cares? And it's just crazy thinking. It's the thing that got me sick, got me using. So I just one day at a time. Today I'm not smoking. Today I'm happy that I'm not smoking. I know other people have had problems with other delivery systems for nicotine. I never got into snuff or into any of those other things. I just like smoking, and I'm really happy that I'm not doing it now, and I'm really joyful that that I've got this program. I've got you people to listen to me. I've got people to listen to and experience strength and hope. So that's 45 minutes of blabbering. I shouldn't say that. I knew a guy that killed himself once. That's a long story, whatever. It takes me a while to wind down while I'm kind of got myself riled up here. So thank you all for listening. If you have any comments, questions, turn it back over to Kenny Mac now. Thanks, folks.